So our Bible reading this morning is from Mark 1, starting at verse 29. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told Jesus about her. So Jesus went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
We lost sound. No, there it is. A very simple question. The question, who am I? A question of identity. And I mention that because it's a question that occurs again and again in Mark's gospel in particular, but in all the gospels. But as you read through the gospel of Mark, you'll hear this question being asked, answered, and reflected on again and again. The disciples ask this question. People Jesus encounters ask this question. Who is this man? Who do you say that he is? Who do you think that he is? Truly a life-changing question, because the answer you give is life-changing potentially, both for those who encounter Jesus in the context of the Gospels and the stories that come to us, like the one we heard read from the beginning of Mark's Gospel today, but also today as we reflect on those Gospel stories, as we hear them read to us, as we reflect on them, as I'm doing this morning, and preach on them, the question will come to us again and again. The voice of Jesus, the voice of others who encounter Jesus, calling out through the Gospels, asking, who do you say that I am? The reading we heard from those five verses at the beginning of Mark's Gospel describes a little incident that occurred in the home of Simon Peter. Peter lived in a place called Capernaum, and we'll come back to what happens in Peter's house in a moment. But first, a little bit of context about Mark and Mark's Gospel, and in particular, chapter 1 of Mark's Gospel. Mark, in his writing style, as you read through his Gospel, is very brief often. He doesn't give us a lot of narrative. He often will just describe what happens and how it happened in a few words, which can be a bit refreshing if you're just looking to know what happened. Just tell me what happened and leave out a lot of the narrative. So when I was studying at Ridley, we used to have to read, as I'm sure Steve and others here, perhaps if you studied theology, have had to read very long and detailed books, often written by theologians. And my lecturer used to say, theologians sort of have a saying that, you know, why say it in a sentence when there's a whole page you can fill with words? But it's refreshing that Mark is very to the point, he's very direct, and things happen quickly. In fact, if you read Mark's Gospel and think about in the coming Sundays the passages and the stories that you'll hear read, you'll just think about how often you hear the word "and immediately," or "straight away," or something like that, because it's a recurring theme in Mark. And we actually have it here in verse 29. As soon as they left the synagogue, something else happens. And that's a common pattern of sort of rapid-fire action here in St. Mark's Gospel, as Jesus goes about the region of Galilee, encountering people, and often that question then arises as these little stories from Jesus's various activities take place. They often end with a question, that same question I began with, the question of identity. Who is this man? Who is this who has come among us? And what does this encounter mean? Do you think you're able to follow okay? There's a little bit of an echo I was sort of hearing. Do you think I should switch microphone? I can go to the handheld if that's easier. You okay? I'll carry on. Okay. Well, if it echoes too much, I'll sing the sermon. You're gonna... No, I won't do that, I promise. So let's go to the context, because the context here is really important. Because as I said, in verse 29, we have this rapid-fire action as soon as they left the synagogue. So it's important then, the first question I think, or ask myself when I read a passage like this is, well, who are they who are leaving the synagogue here? Who is with Jesus? Apparently Jesus must be one of them, but who else is here? And where is the synagogue? Where are they coming from? I've already given you a hint because I said Capernaum was the place. But what led up to this? What are they doing in the synagogue in order to be then leaving it? And the answers to all those questions are in the surrounding context. As I said, the place is Capernaum, a village on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. That's where the synagogue is. And this is the place where Jesus has begun his public ministry. That has just happened in the context of Mark's gospel. I'll just read you the few verses from a little earlier in chapter 1. And this is immediately after the temptations of Jesus in the wilderness. The next thing that happens is he passes along the shores of the Sea of Galilee. And there he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And as he went a little further on, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, who were in their boat mending their nets. And immediately, notice that word again, it keeps occurring, immediately Jesus called to them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men, and they followed him. Simon Peter, as he's described here, his brother Andrew, the fisherman, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, also fishermen. We're told that upon encountering Jesus there in their boats, where they were mending their nets, and hearing the call of Jesus to follow him, they immediately responded. And they come to Capernaum, to the village, which must have been nearby. Now, if you go there today, that is, if you were able to go to the Sea of Galilee, and if you've had the chance to do that, you will see all of this is still there. The sea is still there. It's really a big lake surrounded by little villages, often villages in which there are boats because the main source of livelihood in this part of the world, apart from tourism, is fishing, agriculture. And still today, when you travel in this part of the world, you can see fishermen mending their nets on the shores of the same Sea of Galilee. And we know it's the same because unlike a house or a building or something tangible that can be destroyed or ruined or fall into ruins over time, the sea or the lake has not moved. It's still there. It's still the same lake. And the town of Capernaum is actually still there, even though in ruins. But you can actually visit it today. And I've done this because I take groups to this part of the world from time to time. And you can see the ruins of the town of Capernaum where all of this occurred. You can walk along the shores of the Sea of Galilee, and if you walk far enough, you'll see fishermen sitting at their boats, mending their nets, a little less frequently probably than the time of Jesus, but they're still there. And the great thing about Capernaum, the town, is that archaeologists have been able to excavate this place and to made out the ruins or the walls of where the houses were, where the streets were, and importantly they've found the synagogue. So all of it is there as described here in Mark chapter 1. There is a synagogue in this place, Capernaum. There are houses, and one of the houses has been identified even as the very house in which Simon Peter lived. So there's various reasons for identifying this place as the house of Peter, which I won't bore you with because there's whole books and articles and essays and things written on this. But if you go there, there is a place known as Peter's house in Capernaum. And the reason, the brief reason why that has been identified as Peter's house is because very soon, or very early in its history, of the first 100s around that time, there's evidence that it was turned into a place of Christian worship. So walls were excavated and a cross was carved. And it looks like a place where Christians gathered. So historians and archaeologists believe that that's where Simon Peter's house actually was, and that the first generations of Christians knew that and made it a place of worship. And just to confirm it all, the Roman Catholic Church has built an enormous church over the top of it, so there can be no mistake that this is Peter's house. So going back just a step, Jesus has appeared on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. He's literally walked out of the wilderness, a bit like John the Baptist has, or at least in the context of Mark, all we hear is that Jesus, having been tempted in the wilderness for 40 days, now appears on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. He encounters the fishermen. He calls them. They respond, literally leaving the hired men and their father in the boats with the nets. They get up and follow. And the next thing Mark says is they come to the synagogue. They come into Capernaum from wherever the boats were. So if you can picture this, boats on the shores of the sea, the lake, mending the nets. Jesus comes along, says, come on, follow me. And they're heading that way into Capernaum and they start to follow. Mark says the next thing they do is they go into Capernaum, into the town and into the synagogue. And this is what happens next. This is verse 21. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus entered the synagogue and taught there. And they were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, not like the scribes. Just then there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, what have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. But Jesus rebuked him, saying, be quiet and come out of him. And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. And all were amazed and kept asking one another, what is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even the unclean spirits and they obey him. And at once the fame of Jesus spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee. That little incident occurring on the Sabbath in the synagogue then brings us up to the verse that we heard read today, beginning at verse 29, which is where, which began, as I said earlier, with the words, as soon as they left the synagogue. So what I've just read from Mark's gospel happens in the synagogue. They then leave the synagogue. The they must be Jesus and the four disciples whom Jesus has just called, Simon, Peter, Andrew, James, and John. And we're told that they go into the home of Simon Peter. And this is where the healing of Simon Peter's mother-in-law will now take place. So here we are in Capernaum. If I'd been a little more clever, I would have put some pictures together and put them on the screen for you. But if you can picture the town, the fishing village, there's a house there that is said to belong to Simon Peter, and in Jesus goes, with presumably at Simon Peter's invitation, to extend hospitality to Jesus, who receives it and enters the house. And there we find Simon Peter's mother-in-law ill with fever. I'm just going to pause for just a moment, because this passage, these verses, often remind me of a part of the story that we often pass over quite quickly, or at least I did until I noticed it and thought about it more. And that is that here we meet a vulnerable Jesus in many ways, because he's What's he doing walking along the shores of the Sea of Galilee with no followers? He's just come out of the wilderness. He's a long way from home. If home is Nazareth, that's at least a day's walk away, possibly more. It's in the region, but it's a long way inland on probably difficult and dangerous roads. So in some ways, this is a homeless Jesus, wondering where he'll spend the night probably, not knowing who will provide hospitality to him. There's no suggestion in any of the Gospels that I can see that Jesus knew anyone on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. As I said, it was a long way from Nazareth. It's possible he did, but the way the story is described, Simon Peter and Andrew and James and John are complete strangers to Jesus. He comes to them by divine insight and whatever else is happening spiritually. He calls them and they respond, and that results in Jesus being offered hospitality. But if you follow the sequence of the story, there's no guarantee that Jesus will have anywhere to stay as he comes into Capernaum. He just calls the fishermen, goes into the synagogue, and then we're told they come out and they go into Simon Peter's house. And in many ways, and this is why the house is so important, and I've said a bit about it, this becomes home base for Jesus. When we are told in Mark, and listen for this in future Sundays as you hear the stories read, word spread that Jesus was at home. Where is home? It's not Nazareth anymore. It's now the house of Simon Peter. And it's there that the paralyzed man is let down from the roof. It's there that the crowds gather out the front and other incidents happen. So it's quite fascinating that this is the place that becomes home for Jesus. But up until the point at which Simon Peter must say, come into my house, Jesus has no home that we know of on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. It often reminds me of that portrait that you may know of, where it depicts a famous painting that depicts Jesus standing at the door about to knock on it, holding a lantern often and hoping the door will be opened, because it's both a physical thing, you know, who will invite me into their house and provide hospitality, but also a spiritual thing, who will open the doors of their hearts to me and to my message. So we come to the verses that we just heard read to us. As soon as they left the synagogue, they entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now, Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told him about her at once, and you heard this read. And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening at sunset, they brought to him all who were sick or possessed by demons, and the whole city was gathered around the door. I'm going to avoid tradition at this point and stay away from any mother-in-law jokes. Most people have one when they come to this reading. I don't. I love my mother-in-law. I get on with her very well, so I won't do that. But what I want to do is to go back to the responses to Jesus in these stories, because I've now described three of them: the call, the incident in the synagogue, and the one that was our reading today here in the home of Simon Peter. In the synagogue, we're told that those who witnessed the teaching of Jesus and the miracle that he performed were amazed and asked themselves, what teaching is this? We learn that news about Jesus spread throughout the whole of the region of Galilee, so much that by sunset, as we just heard read in this passage from Mark chapter 1, the whole city seemed to have gathered around the door. I wonder if that's a bit of exaggeration, but it wasn't a very big place. You know, the archaeology suggests that maybe just a few families lived in Capernaum, so it's possible the whole city had come. Something unique and important's happening. Let's all go and see what it is. That's quite possible. But what we do know is that the fame of Jesus, his renown, has spread around the shores of the Sea of Galilee from community to community. And importantly, that the message about Jesus is that here is someone who has authority, who can actually perform the acts of God in our very midst. And so for that reason, that's why they don't just come to see what's happening. They bring their sick. They bring those troubled by demons and whatever their ailment was, that Jesus might heal them. And what does Jesus do? Verse 34, he cured many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons, but he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. We heard that in the synagogue too, when Jesus rebuked the evil spirit and refused the spirit to say who he was. So just to sum all this up, what we are presented with here in Mark chapter 1 in these sequence of stories from the life of Jesus is sort of like a day in the life. You know, in the interview I gave you a snapshot, probably a pretty brief and poor one really of a week in the life of the bishop. But here is a single day in the life of Jesus on the Sabbath. Jesus goes into the synagogue. Jesus teaches. He heals. He responds to human need. He comes back from the synagogue, goes into the house. The needs keep coming. Jesus keeps meeting them. But Jesus, as we heard, did not permit the demons to speak, for they knew who he was. And this is what I want to finish with and just leave you with some reflections on what all of that means. It's often curious, isn't it, that, and this happens again and again and again, another thing to look out for as you hear readings from the Gospel of Mark, that Jesus would not allow the demons or others to say who he was. But in particular, it's the spiritual world who seem to know who Jesus is and who want to make that known, but Jesus refuses to let them make that known. And I think that leads me to two points that I'll finish with this morning and leave with you. The first is that although the demons seem to know, the people in the synagogue and the people bringing the sick and the possessed to Jesus don't yet know who Jesus really is. What they do know is that he has power because they've seen it. They do know that he has authority because they've recognised that. What they don't know is who Jesus really is. Perhaps they think he's another teacher, a prophet, someone sent by God to do something. They don't yet know that Jesus is the very Son of God. They're amazed. They're convinced that something important is happening and that Jesus has come for a reason, but they don't yet know what that is. Jesus commands silence. Why? Well, there are many explanations. One is that he's not yet ready to reveal his true identity, or I think perhaps Jesus is waiting for the people whom he encounters to ask that question, who this man is, and to answer it for themselves. And you may know the story. The one who eventually does that is this same Simon Peter. A little later on in the gospel, as they travel into the north of the country, Peter has that wonderful moment of spiritual insight. And when the disciples begin to ask Jesus, Jesus asks them, who do people say that I am? And they begin with the standard answers we anticipate. Oh, some say a prophet, others think Elijah, some say John the Baptist. Peter has that moment of spiritual insight and says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, which is, of course, the right answer, the only answer, in fact. But Simon has to come to that answer for himself. Now, he's had a great advantage, one that we would never have had, in that he spent probably around a year, according to most scholars, travelling around with Jesus and seeing the acts of Jesus, the things that Jesus has done and said. He's been in close proximity throughout that time, and eventually, it takes a while, but eventually he gets to that moment of insight and he has that moment of clarity. He sees Jesus for who he really is, the very Son of God, God in the flesh, appearing among us. And immediately Jesus, you know, shuts it all down and says, don't tell anyone. In fact, Peter, as you may know his story, still struggles a bit with doubt, even after that wonderful moment of insight, and will not really know who Jesus is and why he has come until even after the crucifixion and the resurrection and ascension. But here's the thing to finish with. The same question comes to each of us still today, and it's still a life-changing question. Probably the most important, well, it is the most important question anyone will ask in their lives. Who is this Jesus of Nazareth? What is his identity? Why did he come? Who sent him? And importantly, what does it mean for me? The way that we answer that question will have a large and important impact on our life. Now, many people will not even ask themselves that question, and that's a tragedy. They may never encounter someone who might put the evidence of Jesus in front of them. Others will ask the question and come up with an answer that is different to the one we know in the Gospels. Whatever we do, and whoever we are, it's important, critical, that at some point in our lives we ask that question of identity, of who Jesus is, and begin to think about an answer, and importantly, then reflect on what that answer means for me. Now, possibly everyone here has done that, and that's wonderful, but if you haven't, you know, it's okay to be still thinking about that and wondering what it means and of all the potential implications that might have for your life. And I'm sure that Steve and other parish leaders here will be pleased to speak to you more about that if that's you, and if you want to consider and explore that question further. Right now I'll conclude, because this is about as long as I've ever preached for, so sorry to put you through that. Normally when I go to places, there are many other things happening with confirmations or whatever and special occasions, and so I don't normally speak for very long. So it's good to be able to have a bit of time today to open the scriptures and reflect on them and think about them, and I hope that's been helpful to you as it has been for me. But let me read the very next verse that happens after the passage we heard today. Verse 35, and I think this is really important, but I won't say anything much about it. I'll just leave it with you and we'll close in prayer. After all of this happens, after the crowds gathering at the door and a long day in the synagogue, healing Simon Peter's mother-in-law, the next day this happens, verse 35, in the morning, while it was still very dark, Jesus got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. So let us pray. Lord our God, we give you thanks for sending your Son Jesus into the world to show us how much you love us and the way that we may come to know you through him. As we sit with Jesus today and in the weeks to come, and as we reflect on the gospel accounts of his life, his ministry, his miracles, and the acts of healing he performed, give us, we pray, the faith we need to know who Jesus really is. And give us the insight to know what you are calling us each to do in response to that faith, that we too might follow Jesus in our lives and be a blessing to others. Amen.